step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Hey everyone, welcome to Reality TV Wrap-Ups for this episode 5 of season 5 of The Amazing Race Canada. My name is Jessica Lise, and I am here with my trusty co-podcaster. Please welcome the man who always brings his good luck panda and his good luck elephant, Mr. Dan Heaton.
Hi, Jess. I'm starting to wonder if they have enough room in their pack for all these good luck charms. Like, maybe are they going to just give them away, or is it a requirement? Because Cinerama is not helping them in terms of their packing.
Yeah, I thought part of the challenge is to kind of streamline your pack so that you can move quickly. And the fact that they're giving them these dinky little stuffed animals that they have to carry around with them for the rest of the race, like, this is a far cry from the roaming gnome, because I believe you could drop the roaming gnome off with Phil when you were done with it.
Yeah, and also, this isn't a great sales pitch for Cinerama. I mean, they do give you cool trips, but after the first stuffed animal, you know, our token of good luck, I don't mean to undersell it as just a stuffed animal, it does seem to not be as cool as it might be the first time.
Yeah, I noticed that when they gave out the second stuffed animal at the top of the leg, everyone is just kind of like, yeah, all right. And they just kind of threw it over their shoulder. And I think it bears mentioning that the good luck stuffed animal really didn't pan out for at least one team this week.
Yes, there was some bad luck across the board for a few teams. But on, we should not undersell this, the longest leg in Amazing Race Canada history. Can you believe it? How are we going to talk about such a long leg?
Well, I think we got to start with the sheer number of kilometers covered. I was going to say the sheer mileage, but we are talking about a Canadian program here, so I think we better keep our metrics straight. I cannot remember the last time that an Amazing Race season involved so many stops in one single leg. And I'm not even talking about this as like the second half of the double leg, so we must count everything that happened in the previous episode. I'm just saying, like, this episode, we had a little stop in Shanghai, and then we moved on to Bangkok. And this really reminded me of old school Amazing Race. They did this fairly frequently back in the day, but you almost never have a team, you almost never have the course involve stopping in one city on your way to the next city without there being a whole separate leg involved anymore.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is, too, is at least to me, it really felt like they were focused more on the travel. Like, the teams were having a great time. I mean, they get to go, you know, they're going to Beijing at start and then Shanghai and then Thailand. It's like it really was almost more about, wow, that leg looks like it would be really fun to do. Look at all the places they're seeing. This is cool. The tasks themselves were not particularly the focus of the leg. I almost feel like, with a few exceptions, the first like 15 minutes or so was just like they're just hopping on, you know, doing a few little tasks. But it's really all about the travel. And that is a rare thing these days, despite the fact that the teams did end up on the same trains and planes and everything. They were all together for that stretch. It was still a lot of traveling. What did you think about this? Do you like this, or does it seem kind of like possibly wasted time?
Well, it's almost as if they're expecting the viewers at home to watch this and think, wow, I'd really like to go do that. If only there was a company I could call that could put me on a trip that would take me to Shanghai and Bangkok and let me see all of these sites that these racers are seeing. And maybe they would even give me a free keychain shaped like a panda bear when I book my travel.
Are you referring to Air Canada?
I'm referring to something. I don't know. Maybe I am. Maybe I'm referring to some other tour company of note. I'm American. I probably can't book tours with them anyway, so it doesn't really matter to me. But it sure seemed like they knew there was going to be an international travel component this season. They got this sponsor on board, and that sponsor is getting everything they can out of this. Like, they're squeezing every last drop of promotion.
Yeah, it's almost like the BMO stuff is an afterthought. Like, yeah, BMO's here to help and all that, but we barely see it. It's all about, I will say, it's Cinerama, that which makes me think of Cinerama, the filming technique, but, you know, different Cinerama. Don't want to get distracted here, but it seems like a big focus. I don't mind it for an episode. I think this episode being more travel focused on a double leg, I think it's cool. I don't think I'd want it to go back this way every time, because it does kind of shift things a bit. I guess maybe if they were going around the whole world, but this seems more like a detour into possibly different leg. But the racers seem to love it. And when the racers are having fun, well, most of the racers were having fun, it's hard to not at least feel that a bit.
Well, yeah, and I've gone on record as saying that I don't mind the product placement at all, because product placement keeps the lights on for everybody. So I really think it's okay. And in this case, it is a natural fit for a tour company to want to sponsor a show about travel. And I don't even mind that we did take a little bit more of a travel focus here, because it was really spectacular scenery. The tasks were a little meh, you know. That's okay every once in a while. I mean, I'm thinking specifically, I always go back to the Sudbury leg for this. Nothing is ever going to be quite that blatant, but this, you know, this was okay. And it was really a treat to go back to Bangkok. Like, I think the Amazing Race could go there in every season of every iteration, and I'd be happy. It's just such a great looking city with so many different aspects that you could highlight.
Yeah, I mean, if you even think they did go there, you know, in Amazing Race 26, where they went to the Caturday Cafe. But I look at the task and things they did, and generally it was very different. So that, I mean, it shows you at least, you know, because I was a little concerned when I saw that and thought, well, I wonder how many things they're doing now they did before. But it's not really that similar, because there's a lot to it, like you mentioned, and they easily could. They're not doing it, but we speculated last week if they would spend another leg in Bangkok, possibly, or in that area. But no, they are going back to Canada. But I think it's a situation where they could, and it wouldn't feel like we were just wasting time.
Yeah, I agree with that. And we have to remember that the season 26 leg in Bangkok was, or the second one, because they did two, but the second one in particular that featured the Caturday Cafe was just such a weird leg. And I was panicking for a minute, like, are they going to take that weird format that they adopted for that leg? And are we going to see the, you know, multitask detour that makes no sense whatsoever? And thankfully, we did not. We just kind of borrowed one kind of cool location that everybody likes. We made it a stop on the way. It wasn't even really a task. So I'm okay with that, too. And it almost kind of evokes some nostalgia. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like, oh, way back in Amazing Race 26. I would have guessed it was longer ago, right? Until, I mean, because it didn't immediately jump to mind which season they did it. And, you know, it's not a huge thing against Amazing Race 26, but it does feel like a long time ago. So I guess we've just watched a lot of good Amazing Race since that point. But there was no snooker this time, so the detours were not as oddly put together.
It was very much still a traditional Amazing Race leg, with your detour and your roadblock and your additional Amazing Race Canada tasks. And nothing was really worth writing home about, but, you know, I was okay with it. I didn't hate it.
So I know it is interesting to know that, did they have a roadblock? I don't think we actually had one this leg. I think they had the task, and I'm not trying to call anything out. I was surprised. I kept expecting one. I thought there would be one after the detour. I wonder if there was something more in Shanghai that we didn't see, like, because it was so quick there. It just makes me wonder if was there a roadblock there that they ran out of time, because really they did the extra task with the puppet show, and then they had the deli where they said the phrase, and then the detour. So it's strange to me, given what we've seen so far, that it doesn't seem like that there was a roadblock.
Maybe there wasn't. It seems like either they're wasn't one, or there was one that was cut out. I think I'd kind of forgotten that both of the team members had to be involved at the puppet show, just because certain team members were so bad at it, you kind of forgot the other team member was there. But yeah, that was just a rude info task. We also had the fast forward that we can't discount.
Oh, right. Yeah. And that's probably, that could be another reason why either they didn't have a roadblock, or they decided there was just, you know, they didn't show it, or it didn't really have an impact on what happened. Because,
yeah, I mean, there's the fast forward was designed, I think, to have some sort of really intense two teams battling it out to see who could score first.
But it was just one of those things where a team got lost and then it was just one team. But that fast forward could have occupied a lot more of the actual show.
You know, I was kind of surprised, like, if we're going to involve this local sport, I was kind of surprised we didn't see this as like a face off.
Yeah, I think it would have that might have made it more exciting. It was really fun to see Adam and Andrea, especially because, you know, for them to win, because, you know, Adam has had a very, very tragic life in that when he was backpacking through Asia, he did not get to go to Bangkok. And now he gets to come back here for 2 weeks. So that may have made up for it. But to get back to your initial point, not to get distracted by my sadness, I agree. I think that would have made a really good face-off. You think back to something they've done in the past, like the curling is a really good example, where you have something that's kind of odd that in general, even soccer players are not going to immediately know how to do. And it could have been really fun. As a fast forward, it really relied on multiple teams wanting to go for the fast forward and get there at the same time. And that's a lot to ask.
It is. I think they clearly didn't intend for Adam and Andrea to be so good at it right out of the gate. But that's definitely a man who's hacked a sack a time or two in his life.
It was fun. I mean, at first, he especially, like, he was getting frustrated because, you know, they had a little bit of silly bickering where it was like, oh no, you're gonna fetch it, no, you're gonna fetch it, which I enjoyed. But they were out of this leg literally, I mean, of the like 44 minutes of the leg, it was like minute 22 they were to the pit stop and done. And wow, it's like, okay, Adam and Andrea, you're good for the leg, but more power to them. I really like their relationship. They seem like they're fun, and I am hoping they're doing well. It's like, I'll say this about most of the teams, but I would be not unhappy if they keep going for a long time.
I would not be unhappy with it either. Not least of all, because they're on Team Jess. I know everybody hates it when we talk about the draft, but I think it's worth noting that I'm not doing too badly. And also in your face, Mike Bloom.
You're not doing too badly, though. You do have the team that is like on the edge of being eliminated, that is continually lost, yet somehow feels like a team that has a good chance of being in the finals in Corinne Navana. Yeah, Mike Bloom, who was the superstar in Amazing Race US 29 drafting, now has one team remaining, Andrea and Ebony. And while his team did finish second, I believe, second or third, I'm trying to remember, but they were near the top. You know, he's got some issues. They were second. They did outlast Sam and Paul, now they look at it. But he lost Zen Shabir, who I had pegged for possibly a finalist. So, and that is a big surprise that we haven't even mentioned yet. The sad ending for a team that I really liked.
Yeah, well, I mean, do you want to go there next? I don't think we need to look too closely at what exactly Zed and Shabir did wrong. We don't need David Bloomberg in here to break it down for us. It was pretty obvious that Shabir just wasn't having a good week this week. Like, nothing went right for this guy. And I think starting off with, you need to read your clue, and he clearly did not. And it kind of makes everybody want to just look at him and go, ha, 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 ha.
Yes, though he kept laughing that way much too loudly. We need to laugh silently at Shabir, not loudly. That was tough to watch, but it is a JL rule, as one of our listeners pointed out, that you got to read the clue. And that, combined with his inability to surf well, it was sad to see. But yes, it was not one of those, oh, they got the wrong cab. It was definitely, I hate to say deserved, because that sounds kind of mean, like somehow they were bad people, but deserved by their performance, I would say.
I think the phrase we're looking for is, they earned that elimination.
Yeah, because I think even after the difficulties with the puppet task, it was pretty clear. He did come close once, but in general, it was pretty clear that Shabir was not going to be able to do the surfing. And I felt bad because, you know, him, along with a few others, took some pretty nasty falls. And I'd probably be right there with them because I don't have good balance. But it's easy to armchair quarterback it. It does look like, at least from the editing, I tend to wonder how close it really was.
I don't think we saw Corey Nirvana and Zen Shabir together, but still, they seemed to make enough mistakes where they didn't have much they could do. And I mean, at the end, they had plenty of opportunities during it to adjust quicker.
Yeah. And I mean, you could probably do a little bit of astronomy here and like look at the position of the sun and like what time was it when everybody rolled in to really nail it down. And it didn't seem like they were egregiously later in that regard. But you're right. We never saw them in the same frame as Corey and Ivana after a certain point. And you kind of have to assume that they were really they were really out of it after that.
Yeah, I wonder how long they spent at that surfing task. And as you can see, they won a leg. They were finishing pretty solid each time for the most part. Like generally, I don't know their average finish in front of me, but they were mostly in the top half during legs, regardless of where they finish. But you have a bad leg, especially, you know, when you kind of already have lost the kind of obvious weaker teams have gone. It doesn't take much. And we've got six strong teams left, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean, we've been saying all along, it's really anybody's game from here on out. I think now we're not going to be looking at all the teams and being able to pinpoint like, yeah, this team is overdue to be eliminated. This one's going next. This one isn't making the finals. Any of these teams could be in the finals. And I think we'd be totally okay with that. And I think we'd believe the trajectory.
Yeah. I mean, even looking at the edit, I know that I still don't have complete confidence that Karen and Bert are getting the edit, but teams can always get an edit and end up third. And we're seeing a lot of everyone. And that's another testament, I think, to only having 10 teams at the start. If we had 12 at the start, it would not be the same way. But it's weird how quick I feel like we've already gotten down to this number of teams. And I haven't checked exactly how many episodes this season will have. I don't like to do that kind of math because then you get to a point where you know exactly how many non-eliminations and where things are likely going to go. But you have to think we're going to probably see some of these teams lasting a while. We may be getting kind of an every other week non-elimination for the next 4 weeks.
I think we've got six more episodes to go. So I think in that time, we're definitely going to see at least two. So do the math. You're right. But I want to go back for a second. What do you think really was the bigger contributor to Zed and Shavir's downfall here, Dan? Do you think it was the monkey puppet task, or do you think it was the surfing? Do you think it was switching detours? Where do you think they went the wrongest?
It's a tricky question because I even wondered about when they switched detours, because the bling task took some serious time to do. That was one of those you would likely finish, but would take a long time. I think the puppet task was the real killer. Because they did it so many times, and it wasn't a case because they didn't read their clue. This wasn't a situation where they just were really close. Like even with the surfing as an example, you didn't have to like go back and go, what are we doing wrong? I don't know. Let's spend 15 minutes. Let's rehearse again with the puppets because they didn't know what they were doing wrong. That it was them talking. I think they probably spent a lot of time. Okay, let's practice again. Okay, let's do this all right. Not realizing that really, if you didn't talk, the task itself was fairly easy.
Yeah, I think it was a little misleading. Like, they really weren't talking. Does laughing count as talking?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's more they were making any sounds at all, which I guess they figured that it would be hard for teams to act like they were laughing or angry without making sounds.
Yeah, that is true. That's very hard to do. A mime is not an easy thing.
And mostly it was just a task to be silly because, I mean, you have the puppet gets to take a selfie and then he gets angry. And I feel like that it was set up. I don't feel the producers, and I don't mean to get in their head, did not expect this would be the type of task that would lead to a teens elimination. But what do you think? Do you think this was it, or was it more what they did on the detour? What do you think?
I tend to agree. It looked like they did that monkey task many, many times. times, but I also think they started out at the quick detour. Those detours were not close together. They had to then, after spending a considerable amount of time at that detour, they had to go and then do the other half, which was the much longer version. But I do tend to agree. I think they were out of it by the time they finally figured out what they were doing wrong at the puppet show. And by the way, shout out to the monkey god Hanuman. We've seen him on The Amazing Race before. Do you recall where, Dan?
I do not. I'm going to need you to remind me of this with your awesome knowledge.
I believe this is the same monkey god who was a part of a dancing task in Amazing Race US season 15 when they were in Cambodia. This is the Zev and Justin Forgot Their Passport episode.
Oh, gosh. Well, it's just bad things happen to teams when this monkey god gets involved.
Well, I think the monkey god is a trickster.
That's true. So maybe it caused somehow the monkey god influenced Shabir into not realizing that he did not need to be laughing so loudly. It befuddled his brain.
It's easy to blame it on the monkey god.
Yes, that is going to be their story when they have, like, you know, the eggs. They probably already done them. I've not seen. But the what did they do wrong? The David Bloomberg type, or when they talk to them, they will say, we did everything perfectly. It was that monkey god.
But yeah, I think the David Bloomberg version of this story, definitely we just say it's Hanuman, the trickster monkey god. And he chose his victim, and his victims were Zed and Shabir.
Yeah, because most teams didn't seem to struggle. Corey and Ivana a little bit. And Sam and Paul, once again, proving that they are very good at tasks like this. I don't know. What do you think? I think they're continuing to be more entertaining than we expected.
You know, it's one of these situations I really feel like I want to think that Sam and Paul are the boring team that have nothing going for them. And then at every turn, they're really trying to make me stop thinking that.
Yeah, it's like they know in the past that they could get presented this way compared to the other teams. And we also, I like to hear their story this time. So that was to hear about their relationship and how everything worked with Paul coming out. I think that was a moving story. And it's always good for me to you learn a bit more beyond how these teams race or how they act on the show. Because like the producers know, it gives us a rooting interest. But for them, I'm finding them pretty likable. And I think, especially when they, you know, wipe out very strongly on tasks in comical fashion. So that always makes them endearing, too.
Yeah, well, I think my favorite moment of the episode might possibly be running to the pit stop and totally face planting.
And the show cut to commercials, too, which I thought was like, what's going to happen? You know, and they also used it in the preview last week, too, which granted it was fine. But yeah, now that I remember, that's why they actually ended up finished pretty much part of the reason that they finished third versus second. And that was quite a fun foot race for really having no effect on the race, possibly because of the nice face plant.
I didn't hate the face plant. I'm glad Sam was OK. It would have been pretty tragic if he'd taken one of these like epic face plants and ended up like breaking his nose or something, or, you know, God forbid, even worse, pulling a Dave O'Leary, and not in the sense of like not doing any roadblocks because he's old, but I mean in the sense of like tearing his ACL and getting, you know, having to leave the game. That would have been terrible, especially to do it while you're running for the pit stop and not like in the middle of a task. I think that might be the worst way to go out. So I'm glad he was fine, and I'm glad he didn't even like scratch up his beautiful face. He's fine. It was just kind of an entertaining moment that we can laugh at for that reason.
When you mentioned Dave O'Leary, my first thought had to go with, I thought that Sam after this fall would then start referring to himself as he's a really old man, though I think he's like 27, and then use that as a reason why he couldn't do well. So that is why I laughed. I did not laugh to myself at tearing an ACL, you know, but the old man stuff, you know, it's good they're okay, because you never want an injury to be caused by something that on the surface at first is hilarious.
Yeah, and I think everything's coming up Sam and Paul right now, because we got some backstory this leg and they did not get eliminated. And you know what that means, Dan. You get some backstory at the beginning of the leg, that means one of two things, right? That means you're getting eliminated or you're going much further.
You know, but let me tell you something, though. We're looking at some backstories here. We've had backstories across the board. We've got Ivana's backstory. We have the backstory from Team Giver, from way back with their friends dying. We have Sam and Paul's backstory. You know, Andrea had that terrible injury, which is a bit of a stretch, but we got a lot of backstory here. How are they all making the finals?
Well, they're not all making the finals. Who haven't we gotten backstory from? We haven't gotten one of these heartwarming moments from Andrea and Ebony. We haven't gotten one of these heartwarming moments from Karen and Bert. I think if I was a betting woman, I would probably put money down on like those two being the next two teams out.
Yeah, I don't think the fact that we learned about Karen and Bert's success as like theater people and comedians, if that would be enough, that would make it that way.
It didn't seem like quite enough. Like, we didn't get anything. I mean, Karen and Bert have a natural sob story in there because they've got kids. Like, why, you know, the second they truck out the kids, I'm telling you, the beginning of the next episode, Karen and Bert take off, and then we start getting voiceovers about their kids. That's going to be their swan song. Like, that's the end of their episode. That's how the show edits these things, and I am very rarely wrong.
I think you're right. I would assume if let's assume next week might be an elimination. I don't know. It's possible that'll wait till five. But the next elimination leg, you know, there's going to be something where they say, talk about how much they miss their kids, because their kids, you know, they have a pretty young child. So one of their kids. So that's an easy thing to talk about. And I agree. They're on my team. I want them to do well. I need to do better than last time, but I think you're right. And we'll see, though. Anything can happen. Maybe the show is just flipping things around on us and it'll all be different.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes the show does things like I'm convinced they do them specifically so that we will be wrong.
It could be the case, you know, because I'm sure they listen to this. And granted, they could not now do an adjustment to the editing, but they've heard us in the past. And I mean, of course, you have to assume the editing is being done for this podcast in order to set us up. But we've been pretty good about picking the winners the last few seasons. And even the way they cast this season, I think it's designed solely to make it harder for us.
Everything that show does is with us in mind. It's for sure. Ever since I called that Mickey and Pete win in season two.
And when I called Dana and Amanda winning. Oh, wait.
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah.
Not so much. I'm going to go hide under the table now. So, yeah. Is there much to talk about with the detour? I mean, I guess we have Bling It. Bling It seems, this almost seems to be the equivalent to me of like, it was like difficulty, but fast. Versus fairly easy. You did have to go to multiple markets, but fairly easy. But there was no possible way to do Bling It and not take a few hours. Because Karen and Bert were one of the first teams to get to the detours, and it took them a long time, and they were passed by a bunch of the other teams. So does that seem right? That basically the right choice was Shred It if you could do it.
I think, like, if you can do the surfing thing, like, if you can, there's a little bit of skill involved, a little bit of adrenaline involved. If you can get the adrenaline going and if you can get the task out of the way, that's going to be very, very fast. But if you don't feel like trying it, here's a shopping list and a bunch of details. Go nuts.
Yeah. And I think it did play into the favor of Corey and Ivana, who, even though they finished nearly last, you know, in sixth, with her back issues, having a task they could do that was not so physical gave them a shot. And given all their experiences just trying to get around the city and get where they needed to go, it helped them a lot just to have something that at least there was kind of a set time that they would be able to do it.
Yeah, but this is one of those tasks, like, I never find this one all that entertaining, and it's one that they do. I feel like the race designers get to a certain point, and they're like, I am so tired of coming up with tasks. Well, they're in a new city. Let's just make them go shopping for a bunch of stuff. Because we've seen this so many times over the course of Amazing Race history. I think most recently, we even saw it this past season. This was the first Zanzibar leg of the past season of Amazing Race US, where they were given a list of things and they had to go to a market and find them. And it's like, you know, this city is known for its spacious outdoor markets and all the weird shit you can buy in the market. And we're going to send people loose to find all this stuff that they're not familiar with. And, you know, I think most famously it was probably your favorite season, Dan, back in season 7 with the orphanage shopping task.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. I think that this task might have been more interesting if it was really about attention to detail and there was something crazy with how you had to match it up. But really, the whole trick was that, oh, you have to go to the other market to buy some lights. And that's just not very thrilling TV. And I bet you they do this shopping task almost every season in the US version, at least. And they're mostly roadblocks. But there are so many times where a lot of it was food. But in general, this is kind of the snoozer one where it's like you are interacting with the culture. But here didn't seem like they were really, the market was not particularly crazy. It wasn't like they'll never find it. It was kind of just, okay, we found everything here. Let's go back to the other place. Oh, wait, we missed something. So while I think it benefited Corey and Ivana from a race perspective, I wouldn't say that it was thrilling television, at least for me.
Yeah, and I think the fact that it wasn't a general purpose market sort of narrowed the excitement. Like, this was like, we're going to go to this specialty area where people that drive tuk-tuks shop for bling for their tuk-tuks. And that's all they sell, really. And there's even a like specialty market that's like a subspecialty of this specialty where you can only buy lights to bling up your tuk-tuk. And you have to go there, too. And I guess it's kind of cool that this thing exists and we got to see it. And, you know, we spent a lot of time on it. I think possibly too much time for this being a really rote task in Amazing Race lore.
You know, the way you just described it actually sounded a lot more entertaining than it was. I was like, oh, because you described it. And I was kind of smiling. I was like, oh, a special market with bling and with certain bling. I'm like, that sounds really cool. But that doesn't always mean it's great television, you know, and it's what, again, because it took so long to do and because we got to a situation where the teams that finished 5, 6, 7, I believe, or near the back, were all doing that task. It made it where we had to spend a lot of time on it because there was no one. You got to a point where, yeah, no one was left surfing. Team Giver was the last team that finished the surfing and they finished 4th. The last 3 teams were all doing bling. So you had to really put a lot of drama on. They're missing one piece. Where is it? Oh, I have to go back. And the show did its best, but there's only so much they can do with that.
Yeah, I agree. They were forced to show the task because it contributed so much to the plot. I did think one of the tricks I think that was tripping people up was the fact that one of the pieces of bling was actually one of those stupid keychains that Cinerama gave them.
That's the worst. I take back every good thing I said about Cinerama before. I've had it. It's their fault. But no, Cinerama is great. They give out 2-week trips to cool countries. If they want to send me a trip, they are the greatest place ever.
And they can't send us trips, Dan. We're not Canadian citizens. But they're really shaping up to be the Travelocity of Canadian sponsored trips to the Orient.
Yeah, so I did want to use this point to mention something that many, many people told me after last week's podcast, which when I mentioned that the trip to Chicago would be cheaper because the taxes were lower. And once again, we found another reason that Canada is amazing in that Canadians on these trips that they get as prizes do not have to pay taxes. So this makes the Chicago trip that Zed and Shabir won even worse, especially now they were eliminated. But I did want to give him a help bug because it's amazing when you get really excited to get comments back about the podcast. And a majority of the comments are just people saying, hey, Dan, I just want to tell you that you're wrong about the taxes. So I apologize to Canada because I really think that I made a big mistake and I did not give you enough credit. And now I'm even more jealous of the teams that get these trips that are thousands and thousands of dollars and they don't even have to pay taxes, which is amazing. Once again, hooray for you, Amazing Race Canada.
Oh, Canada. And on a related note, thanks, everyone. I understand now that the numbers and letters on the clue from last week turned out to not be coordinates, but measurements. And thanks to all 50 of the eagle-eyed people that pointed that out to me, I feel sufficiently chastened.
Yeah, that was the second most common thing. You know, people, if you just want to write us and say, we love the show, that's great, too.
That was number 17 in the rankings of what we should do. But no, we're saying this all in jest. We do appreciate the clarifications, but I was amazed at the amount on those certain things. But it shows that you guys are listening very carefully to what we have to say, right, Jess? They're on top of it.
Yeah, if we were ever doubted that we have listeners, all we got to do is get something egregiously wrong and everybody will make sure that we know about it. So I appreciate you all. Thank you so much for listening and for setting us right where we go wrong. So on that note, Dan, do we have some questions or was it all just people correcting us this week?
No, we do have questions. It was not all people correcting us. So I will start by saying I don't really agree with this comparison. But from our Facebook group, we had Derek Sue who said, Corey and Ivana, do they equal the new Beekman boys? Now, Team Panda, do they deserve more credit or is this an accurate thing, Jess?
I think you have to remember Corey and Ivana have had 2 second place finishes and at least one of those was fairly close. They are in it competitively just because they've had a couple of kind of bad legs involving an injury. I don't think it's fair to tar them with the Beekman brush. I mean, as much as I love the Beekman boys, you know, I feel like they've kind of become this punching bag for Amazing Race fans as like undeserving winners who never did anything well. And I'm not sure where exactly this comparison is coming from, except that perhaps, you know, Corey and Ivana got very lucky, but honestly, like they didn't get saved by the last non-elimination leg, so they've got that going for them. And, you know, despite some injuries, they're not doing terribly. They had some bad luck. I think they could definitely rebound. They're not a team that if they end up in the finals, we're going to be sitting here scratching our heads. I think you've said that yourself.
Yeah, and I totally agree. I think it would take, they would probably have to have at least 2 saves for nominal eliminations, including one where there was a task that they just could not do and basically were just sitting on the side of the pool giving up. If they get to that point, then we can compare it. But right now, I would say you brought a good point. I think they have had twice where they were close to last, but they have not finished last, and they've proven to be very good at tasks. And up until the amazing final task of that season where the Beekmans, you know, pulled ahead, where they were able to make up lots of time with their skills.
Yeah, I think the Beekmans basically won the Amazing Race on the basis of being good at one task that everybody else was really bad at.
Yeah, that's all it takes, I guess.
Apparently so. All right. So what else we got in the questions realm? Carol Landers wanted to know, why go overseas and rush all the countries? It seems expensive for a couple of episodes.
Well, this is kind of a normal approach for the Amazing Race Canada. It seems like normally when they go overseas, or we will get 2 episodes there. And there's a probably that we may do it again later this year. But especially when you're going to Asia, we did the same thing last season where I believe there was 2 episodes. I think they believe it justifies the expense, but the goal still is to focus on Canada because, you know, they want to make Canada proud. But even though we've been to a lot of cities in Canada, and I'm sure we're going to do some repeats as we go along, the show does seem to, for financial and for thematic reasons, at least to me, want to focus on it and make these trips internationally more special rather than like half the show. Do you agree? You think that's a big part of it?
I think that's a big part of it. And I think it's also worth noting that these 2 legs were basically shoved in there so that we could showcase a sponsor and not necessarily intended to be a sort of leisurely cruise around the world. Like this is basically the Sudbury leg writ large, right?
Pretty much. Yeah, there's a lot more travel here, but it pretty much was. And this brings up a good point in terms of we got 2 questions about this, which I kind of hinted at a little bit before. John Johnston in Facebook asked, was the Shanghai leg a letdown because of just getting the clue? And also Stephanie on Twitter, she had said, what was the point of the deli stop? And I think you've kind of hit on it already. It does seem weird to me that even though the deli has a connection to Montreal, like a Montreal style deli, it was kind of odd that they didn't at least do more of a task there. Was that a disappointment?
You know, there's so much you can do with a deli. I feel like you could at least rehash like the Orange Julius leg, like go into the deli and like have to sort pickles or something. It's not rocket science. They could have done something. And I understand they probably went through Shanghai, like just as kind of a way station. There were probably more reasonable direct flights out of Shanghai. They probably wanted to get them on the trains. There are a number of reasons they had the stopover in Shanghai. It just could have felt like a lot less of a stopover if they really thought about it.
Yeah, it's possible they didn't want to do anything hard because they were trying to make sure all the teams got on one flight. And I hate to think of it just in terms of logistics, but if they had put in something even like, okay, here's a roadblock, you have to take orders from someone at the deli and fill it and be accurate, which I think is a fun task. I would like to see them do that. They've done things like that before. Somebody could end up spending 5 hours on that, and that could really mess with what they had planned.
That's true. Like having to rebook all the flights when they really want everybody to be on the same flight. You know, I'm thinking like Kent and Vixen getting lost in Italy levels of terrible. So I think we skipped over a major plot point of this episode. I think this next question kind of goes into Kemper Boyd wants to know, when a team loses their clue, why would other teams give them theirs to copy? It's an auto elimination.
It's a good question. Yeah, I'd forgotten to mention that because it's so early in the episode with Sam and Paul. First, you know, losing their tickets and their clue, then finding the tickets and still losing the clue. All of this happened in a span of about 2 minutes. And then Adam and Andrea giving them, you know, telling them where to go. I have mixed feelings about this. I think Adam and Andrea, if you're confident that you don't think you're going to be second last, like if you're confident enough where basically you feel like we're going to at least we want some friends ahead. There hasn't been a U-turn yet. I don't think it's a terrible move to do that, because let's say you don't help them and somehow Sam and Paul get help from someone else. Then you're the team when they get to the U-turn board, which is next week, that they want to target. It's a little, with seven teams left, I think it's a little cute to be that rough. But if they get eliminated, you eliminate a strong team, you can kind of go either way. I didn't have a huge issue with it because I feel like the teams have to know a U-turn is coming.
Yeah, I think you really, if someone straight up asks you for help and you don't give it to them, all you've done is like made it really easy for you to get the U-turn. So why not? Like, you don't have to proactively offer the help, but if someone asks you, like, go ahead and help them, and then maybe you don't get U-turned and maybe they owe you a favor later on. So I didn't hate it. I thought it was okay.
It's also interesting to note, like, what we don't know. Do Sam and Paul and Adam and Andrea, have they been getting along really well? And they asked them because they've already, like, you know, talked a lot during the race. Did they ask two or three other teams and get rejected? And that may come up in some fashion. Like, some of the other information that might help us to realize if this is good or not. I mean, they showed it to us, which seems likely that it may come up next week in some fashion, but they didn't show us anything else, like if them asking and having team give or be like, we won't give her to you or something. There's, you know, I don't think they would do that, but I couldn't help it. That does not go onto the giver count, just though. The thing I just said, it's not real. It's fan fiction.
Fan fiction. Yeah.
Yes, I'm a storyteller. It's what I do. So I feel like it was okay. But again, with the info we have, it seems like it's an all right move.
Yeah. And I am inclined to say that because we did not see them asking anybody else, I'm inclined to say that does not come up. Like, it would be really weird for this to happen in the next leg where Sam and Paul, like, U-turn team giver, like, because you didn't give us the clue when we asked for it. Well, we didn't see that. So it's not foreshadowed at all. So I'm going to say this either comes up in the context of somebody specifically does not U-turn another team on this basis, or it was just a kind of a weird thing we threw in at the beginning of the leg to inject a little bit of suspense and drama, and it was resolved quickly and has no further effect on the race. That's my inclination.
Yeah, that's pretty likely that that's the case. And there's another thing we haven't even mentioned yet, which is not as essential because it's more about referring to the U.S. version. And Jessica Frey brought this up. She said, did the surf challenge get easier because I thought it was harder when Bethany did it in the American version. Now, what she's referring to is in Amazing Race US season 25, when we had a situation where a professional surfer, the sole surfer, if you will, got to do a fast forward and completed it. But Jess, did this original version, was it harder, or the version from US 25, or was this one similar?
I think the one from US 25 was much, much harder. Honestly, I recall you had to stay upright on the surfboard for a ridiculous amount of time. Like, in fact, I would say an amount of time that you could probably not complete unless you were a professional surfer, and I'm still kind of salty about that because I loved the cyclists. I wanted them to go further than they did. And I thought it was kind of BS that there was a surfing task in a season that featured a professional surfer. But that's neither here nor there. That one seemed a lot harder. You really only had to stay on your surfboard in this one for, you know, 10 seconds at most, because you just get up there, grab your flag. It didn't look like anybody's attempts at this required you to be on it for more than a couple of seconds. So I think this was much, much easier.
Yeah, I agree. And I didn't even remember as well until I looked it up how much harder that other one was, because it seemed harder. In this case, you could basically, if you could get your momentum going in this one, the Canada version, you could almost stumble forward with the board. And as you were falling off the board, grab the flag. And that's what a few teams did. That's the only way I would ever finish it. And to stay up for 2 minutes, 2 minutes on a surfboard is an eternity. I mean, that is no joke. Like, I probably think I was standing up for a while and it'd be 16 seconds or something. So that was a fast forward. So they're not entirely similar, because here it was a detour. And making the, if you had made these teams be up for even a minute, it would have been pretty unlikely, that, especially because they both had to do it, that hardly any of them would have made it. So at least that was a fast forward. But I agree that that seemed extremely hard, even for teams that are athletic.
Yeah, I would have hated this if it had turned out to be a fast forward at some point. But I think for the detour, they could not have made it stay up for 2 minutes, like, even though the other half of the detour did take a ridiculously long amount of time. I think you had to make it much easier to balance it.
Right. So one other thing I wanted to ask you. So what do you think is going to happen? Ryan Gerald on Twitter asked for our predictions for next week, double U-turn. He's asking, do you think that they might stack it against one team? I'm a little skeptical, but I'm curious what you think about how this is going to go.
Well, there's no Vank and Ashton team, is there? There's no team that everybody's piling on. Everybody seems to get along, which I guess is the beauty of Amazing Race Canada. But I really can't see it going that way. Like, nobody has been shown to be in conflict with anybody else. I think the U-turn will be deployed kind of circumstantially, if it gets deployed at all. I think it'll be more like, this team's way behind us, we're just going to push them even further back to get them out because they're otherwise strong. It's not going to be this sense of, like, everybody colludes to get one team out, because that just doesn't seem like the story we're being told.
Right. I agree. And we also haven't heard anyone mention the U-turn until this, which sometimes when they're setting up a U-turn for a future episode, which I'm not a fan of this type of editing. So kudos, Amazing Race Canada. You'll have people constantly talking about the U-turn the episode before it, like about what's going to happen, or there'll be drama. And another thing to mention, which Mike Boyle brought this up, but I did not do the research, Mike, about when this happened before, but we've had five different winners in five legs. And that also makes it seem less likely that a team will automatically be targeted, because, I mean, one of the teams that won a leg was, you know, we had Zed and Shabir win a leg. And actually, if I'm thinking correctly, that
Megan and Courtney won a leg.
So only three teams remaining have actually won a leg so far. So, you know, and Adam and Andrea, Team Giver, and Sam and Paul. And so no one is standing out right now as being so far ahead. It's really, I mean, we've said it's anybody's game, but I think that's also true for how the teams look at it. I think all six teams remaining all think they can win and don't have some team they're afraid of that they feel like they have to remove.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And it's interesting. I think almost every iteration of the Amazing Race US in the last 5 years has had four different teams winning the first five legs. But I have not gone back far enough to find the last time that it was like five legs, five teams. So that is unusual, but it's not as unusual. I think it's pretty evenly dispersed. I think it is a fair point that there's no team that's just like steamrolling everybody else. And there's not even a team that feels like they could jump ahead like that. So that's not going to be the criteria, I don't think. It's going to be, I think, more of a Seth and Olive situation where this very strong team is a little bit behind us at this point, and we'll go ahead and U-turn them just to keep ourselves competitive.
I agree. And especially with it being a double U-turn, which I have mixed feelings about that, because what it ends up happening is, let's say the top three show up somewhere and Karen and Bert are behind, and Karen and Bert could U-turn, and they're just ahead of Andrea and Ebony, and they're like, well, I guess we U-turn them, which doesn't lead to amazing drama, despite there being two teams kind of fighting it out. It generally means that second team is in real trouble. So that seems most likely that some sort of scenario like that will happen, and then it'll just be a question of where they put it in the leg, because they've been putting these U-turns in the U.S. in season 29, they put the U-turns right at the start of the leg. So I'll be curious to see if Canada follows that trend or if it does it differently.
Well, Canada is not stupid, so I'm going to say Canada's probably not going to do that. P.S. That's the stupidest thing anybody on The Amazing Race has ever done, ever. And there have been some really stupid leg design things. That is the stupidest. I'm holding nothing back. Anyway.
So next week, if this happens, we will have to talk about how stupid it is.
Yes. And I'm going to have to reserve an extra half hour on the podcast for me to rant about how stupid that is. So everybody get hype, because I'm going to go off on a tear or maybe don't listen at all. I don't know. So, Dan, I think that about covers our questions that we got. We're a little light on the questions, not as light as the show was on the givers. Did we get a single giver this episode?
I don't think so. I did not hear any. I mean, there was a few as they were surfing, but you know, sometimes I rope that together with giver, but I think the giver is gone back in the box. You know, I think they heard about the fact that people were gonna assume they had a lot. I mean, what did they have, the 15 the first week or something crazy like that? And we barely had that much in the last four. So once again, I prove that I am great at picking things that are very unimportant. So I'm rolling along with my pick.
We'll come up with something for you, Dan. Yeah, giver count sits at 25, I believe, and it might just sit there till the end of the season, in which case you will win and you will be right. So you got that going for you. And who knows? We both still have teams in the mix. Either one of us could pull out a win in the draft department, and that would be great, too. So I guess we're going to move on to administrative notes. Want to thank everybody for sending your questions in. We always love hearing from you on the Twitter and on the Rob is a Podcast Patron Facebook group. Anywhere you really like to send us the questions, we're happy to receive them. And we are happy to receive them at any point after you finish watching the show. Some people even tweet at us during the show, which is kind of cool, I guess, even though, you know, we obviously don't watch it live. So we'll get to those questions when we get to them. Don't worry about spoiling us, because this is a risk we've taken on as two Americans covering a Canadian show. Totally cool with it. So you can reach us with questions about the episode or general show feedback on the robsawebsite.com. You can leave a comment on the episode thread for each show, or you can tweet at us. I am at Haymaker Hattie.
And I am at the Dan Heaton.
We always love to get feedback from anybody and everybody about anything, even if it's just to tell me to stop ranting about how stupid that one thing on that one iteration of the show that isn't even this iteration is. We get a lot of questions from people wanting to know, if they themselves do not live in Canada, how do they get their hands on copies of this show? And the answer is, every tip we get comes generally from the Facebook group for patrons of Rob as a Podcast, and the easiest thing you can do to get access to all that information is just to sign up at robhasawebsite.com/Patreon and become a patron of podcast. And that helps us keep things running around here. And it opens up lots of extra podcast content to you too. It's highly worth it. It's a great chance to meet fellow fans and get connected to a great community. We really can't recommend that enough. I also have to give a shout out to the listener who actually helped us out this week by messaging me on Facebook with all of her links to last week's episode because she'd heard we were having trouble tracking it down. So we appreciate that too. Like, just because we are discouraging you from asking us directly how you can view the show, you can feel free to volunteer your links to us. Like, we love that. I appreciate that. That was very thoughtful of you, listener. I guess next week we'll be talking U-turns, Dan. Is there anything else we need to add before we sign off, before we give her a rest, as it were?
No, they're going to Ottawa, to the capital. So hopefully it'll be fun. We're getting down to it. So I'm excited to see where it goes.
Yeah, we're going to the capital, and it's the site of the season 2 finale. It was great then. I'm sure it's going to be great next week as well. So thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you then.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.